This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy.
You need surgery.
Bisexuality.
Bisexual.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexual.
Triple bypass.
Bisexual.
Bisexual.
Bisexuality.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexuality.
The best
of both worlds.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass on Joy 94.9.
Triple Bypass acknowledges that we broadcast from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging, and to any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people who are listening today. We acknowledge that this land was never ceded, no treaty was ever signed, and that it always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Everybody needs you when you're by. From the tension and the passion.
messed up with their sexuality.
Hey, we're the Veronicas, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
That's right, this is Joy 94.9, and you have just tuned into Triple Bypass, where the bisexuals take over the airwaves. Thanks, Gracie and Flo, for One Hot Wonder, where they're exploring Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill and giving us all some serious 90s nostalgia. But I'm Rivi, and I'm joined in the studio by some new faces. We've got Andrew, who's here to see how he likes being on the radio as possible recruit. Hey, Andrew.
Hello, Ruby.
Yes, it's so good to have you here. And we are very excited. Our special guest tonight is Senator Janet Rice. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm very pleased to be here. Where else would I rather be on a Tuesday night at 9 o'clock?
No. The community, like LGBTI community radio station. Now, for those of you who are unaware, Janet Rice is a Green Senator for Victoria, federal senator, and a Greens representative. They're also an LGBTIQ plus spokesperson for the Greens Party. And it's always been a personal, LGBTIQA plus equality is very personal for Janet. You were a massive spokesperson during the marriage equality debate and leading up to that. But not just that, whenever there has been any issue, whether it's looking at religious discrimination in schools, whether it's looking at Australia's response to the to what's happening in Chechnya, you've always been very much up the front, waving not only a rainbow flag, but quite recently, a bi flag too.
Yes.
And so that's right. Last year in September, Bi Awareness Week, you became, I think, the first ever senator to identify as bisexual. And I know that you were wearing the wonderful bi flag, and I think that was that became a huge moment for a lot of the bi plus community in Australia to see an openly bi politician talking about the community and to hear our community referenced. And but that was also, you mentioned that was actually when you were coming out too. So I suppose to talk about this, you're a strong voice for the bi plus community, even if you haven't always identified that way. And so it's really been in the last 6 or so months, so that's become a bit of your public persona as well?
Yes. I mean, for me, as for most people, sort of getting to understand yourself. I grew up, we were just talking when we were off air about what things were like when we were at school, for example. You know, and I was at high school in the 70s. Yeah. And I don't think, absolutely everybody at my school, as far as I was concerned, a school of 500 girls, were absolutely straight.
Yep.
You know, there was one girl that we thought, oh, I think she might be a lesbian.
She has short hair.
Yeah. She was a bit butch. Hair, that's right. Absolutely none of the teaching staff know. Yep. And it was just such, heteronormativity,
Yeah.
And then, yes, and so, look, I was attracted to boys, and so, I had boyfriends. Yep. And then, from time to time, you'd think, I find girls attractive too, but
who doesn't,
exactly. But given that heteronormativity, that was just something that you suppressed, essentially.
Yeah.
And then I fell in love and got married, Penny, who we met when I was only 21, and I'd been a, strong, committed monogamist all my life, which, that's how I am.
Yeah.
And so there we were in, a monogamous, loving relationship. And so, I was, I very much identified as being straight, despite, as I said, occasionally there'd be women that I'd find attractive, but no, I was straight and I was married to Penny. But this was, and then there was the big shock in our marriage of then Penny telling me about her being transgendered and us coming to terms with that. And the big moment was this realization, and in particular there was one night when we were out dancing when she was in her as her Penny, her female identity, and looking at her and thinking, I think she's pretty cute, and I'm absolutely still in love with her. For so many people in that situation when a partner transitions, it just doesn't work out, and much as they'd like it to, just on the basis of sexuality, they think, they grew apart. Whereas for us, for me, it was, okay, Penny's transitioned, she's a woman, she's affirmed her gender, and I still love her and I still find her attractive.
Yeah, and if the only thing that is different is gender, it's not a big deal. Is there a word for this?
And even then, so then, we told our story of, at that stage I was on Maribyrnong Council, so I had a public profile as well, and so it was it became a public story fairly quickly about Penny's transition. It wasn't positive at the very beginning. It was, here's this weird Greens councillor with a transgender partner.
Yeah.
So most of our, in terms of talking about our relationship, it was talking about Penny as being transgendered, and yes, we were now a same-sex couple. And it really, it took a while for me to actually click and to, you know, whereas I knew that I was still attracted to her, to actually then identify as being bisexual.
Yeah.
And partly it's because there just isn't a high profile of bisexuality.
Yeah.
You know, even now, people still think it's so binary.
Yeah.
You know, you're either same sex attracted or you're straight.
Yeah.
And
monosexism.
Exactly. Yeah. And so being bisexual just really wasn't a lot high on my agenda even at that stage.
So were people asking if you were a lesbian now? Was that generally what was like,
yes,
you know, so
that's
that
right.
was the yeah.
Yes, you know, my sister, for example, you know, called me the accidental lesbian and which I accepted that title initially, but then
I mean, it's a great name for a memoir, maybe.
Right. But then it was no. Yeah. And in fact, one of my speeches in the Senate, and I think that bisexual speech, I said, actually, that's not accurate because no, I'm not a lesbian.
Yeah.
I'm bisexual. Yes. And proudly bisexual. So for me, it has been that journey. And yes, happy to now be melding that personal and political in terms of, you know, raising the profile and the reality and the existence of bisexual people.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I know that in the circles I was moving in, there was such a strong response to this video. Like people, myself included, found it very emotional. And I think a part of that was because we hadn't seen it before. And it was that kind of, that next step in legitimization, really. That next step of seeing, you know, someone in a position that they've achieved and like knowing that we are able to achieve these things, not in spite of, but, you know, while being. And I think often it's very hard to picture yourself being successful or to be happy if you don't see people who use the same terms you do and live the same kind of lives you do in that same way. And I think this year, you know, we've had a bisexual senator in the United States for the first time.
Who's
been rocking some really good fashion looks. Oh, my gosh, she's so well-dressed.
That's not me, sorry.
I know, I'm
just a bit of a dag, you know, comfortable in my bushwalking clothes rather than my senatorial clothes most of the time.
I love that. You know, I think Mara Wilson once famously said, she's like, let bisexuals be boring. Like, you know, some of us are daggy, that's fine.
It's the leather jacket, the hoodie and the plaid.
The cuff. Cuffed jeans, that can be both practical and stylish. So you can have both worlds.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, one of the good things about being a senator is having staff. And so, you know, to absolutely multiply what I'm able to do.
Mm.
But you also then have people that can sort of look me up and down when I'm going out and say, no, Janet, I don't think that quite works. I don't always take their advice.
Your own stylist.
Well, we're coming up, we've got, so Janet, you picked a few songs for us. This one next coming up is The Greatest by Sia, who we've actually played on the show a lot. Another Australian bike on. So stay tuned for, we'll be chatting with Senator Janet Rice after this break. You're listening to Triple Bypass. This is Joy 94.9.
I got stamina. Hi, I'm Mara Wilson, former child actor, current writer, aspiring bicon, and you are listening to the show that puts the B in LGBTIQ. Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9.
That's right. This is Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. I'm Ruby. That was Sia with the greatest. And I'm joined by one of my bicons, Federal Senator Janet Rice. Oh, it's so lovely to have you here. And we're also joined by Andrew. You can be my, you're my bicon to be.
That's all I'm after, really.
We had a message come in during the break. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 0427JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au or through the Joy app. Can you read the message, please?
I sure can. It's from Philip, and he says, "Thanks, Janet, for being on Triple Bypass. Us older bisexuals need role models and public figures we can relate to. Like you, I was uncertain of my sexuality for many years and truly understand how difficult the choice to come out must have been."
Hmm. Thanks, Philip. Also, what a beautiful reading voice you have.
I try.
So before the break, Janet, you were talking to us about your partner Penny's transition and how that was really... when you started to actually have to recognise your, you know, that you were multigender attracted, but also how the focus, or everyone else's focus in that relationship, was very much focused on Penny's gender change, like transition.
Yes.
And not on, and you, your sister was calling you an accidental lesbian. Yeah, and I think when you came out in September, you kind of were a very, you were probably the first openly, proudly bisexual voice we've seen in the Australian government. Mm. And I'm not sure, I haven't heard of anyone, even in the state governments, of actually being openly bisexual.
No, I certainly don't know of anybody else in the parliament who is yeah. openly bi.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, the reasonable number and increasing number of gay and lesbian MPs.
Yeah.
Yes, I think I'm the only one that's out as bi. And I was amazed with that speech, not only the response that I got from Australia, but all around the world.
Yeah.
It got shared,
yeah.
you know, across Europe and
we
across the
networks.
US. That's right. and yes, and so I was, you know, it's a privilege to be in a position sort of as a parliament and to have that platform, and it's, you know, great to be able to use it for good.
Absolutely.
For sure. As a parliamentarian, is there anything anything about how your colleagues treat you in the Senate that might relate to your bisexuality?
Has it changed since you've come out?
No, I mean, because certainly the whole time I've been in the Senate, you know, people have known of my relationship with Penny, and so they were, identified me as same-sex attracted, if, you know, rather than bisexual.
So no one was thinking you were straight, thank goodness.
No, that's right. No one was thinking I was straight. And we're within the Greens, of course, absolutely fine. In fact, you know, it would be wonderful to have the demographics of the Greens membership, certainly amongst active Greens members. You feel like you're a bit of a minority if you are straight. but in the wider sort of community, well, it depends. I mean, there are people, some great supporters from the other parties, you know, people like Louise Pratt and the other MPs that I worked with on marriage equality and, you know, the team of the LGBT parliamentarians.
Plus Warren Inch.
Plus Warren Inch, that's right. Other allies of great supporters. And then there are the people in the parliament who I won't name because I don't want to be... I haven't got parliamentary privilege here being on air. Who, let's just say, they are rather... last century or even the century before, sort of the troglodytes, the dinosaurs, the old straight white men and who have got a huge amount, huge egos and a huge amount of privilege.
Ooh, a lot of
and
opinions.
Anybody who's not a old white straight men, they either dismiss you or the worst is when they just look straight through you. You're not even worth, you know, having the time of day being spent considering that your very existence is worth being there.
Mm. I mean, we are invisible. It is our superpower.
Yes.
Oh, no, it's excellent. And that, yes. Like, just except for, you know, the 23rd of September, then everyone can see us. Yeah, firstly, yeah. It's great because I can finally order a coffee and it's a long wait. It's a year between coffees. But also, it just costs a lot more to go to the cinema.
Yeah.
But I think that's definitely the dynamics in politics and what, you know, as far as, you know, the government is supposed to be a representation of people, and the demographics we have in both, like, you know, state, it's getting better. Both Greens and Labor have got come a long way when it comes to providing gender equality, but just as, even so far as, you know, LGBTIQA plus backgrounds, disability, and ethnic background, when it's still we're representing not really the whole country, but quite a small subsection of it.
Exactly. And it's, you know, it's our political system that does it, and certainly the major parties that haven't thought it important to have that representation. And where you have single member electorates, the temptation is always to think, well, who's the person that most, you know, best represents the person that people see as a politician, and that's likely to be a white male.
But it's interesting.
A heterosexual white male in their 30s, 40s, or 50s.
Because electorates, actually, I think that research has found that electorates themselves are not as gendered as the politicians themselves.
That's right.
So it's more that women can get into the seats, it's just that then they're not listened to, or they don't get given safer seats. But enough about...
one of the interesting things, certainly in terms of female representation, but probably LGBT representation as well, is that the Senate, because it's proportional representation and six people get elected for each state at any one time, does give you... Each party will typically put up a group of people that have a bit more diversity. Because if you put up a Senate ticket that was all, you know, white, straight men, people would think that's not really on. So at least you might get a woman, or you might get someone who's same-sex attracted or gender diverse somewhere in a party's Senate ticket.
Tokenism. Isn't it great?
That's right.
I think, and I imagine a lot of it would be to do with your relationship with Penny, you've always been a massive champion for transgender rights and LGBTIQA plus rights, and also you've been one of the strongest voices that has been calling for an inquiry and an ending to non-consensual intersex medical interventions. And recently, you know, you've been particularly outspoken around religious discrimination in schools towards both students and teachers. Now, that's been stalled again.
Yes, that's very sadly.
Yeah, and so I suppose I've noticed even a lot of the language around that and conversion therapy often will talk about specifically gay. I think the one time I heard bisexual mentioned was when a right-wing shock jockey was talking to Scott Morrison about how he'd feel if his daughters were hearing about a bisexual student, a girl at school, and made his skin curl, which is a very odd combination of reactions. But yeah, so I find that often. Have you noticed that since you've come out that the language perhaps... You know, you can pick those things more, like you do notice when...
Absolutely, yes. And you just realise, the invisibility and how you just get left out.
Hmm.
And even, you know, when you... With the LGBTIQ portfolio, you just realise how many, so many other people, they'll continue just be talking about gay rights, which means you're basically making invisible every other, you know, the lesbians, the transgender people, bisexual people,
and the
intersex community, let alone people that are non-binary and sort of gender diverse, you know, they're just not there.
Mm.
And so that's one of the real things that I think the focus is going to be over the coming year or years, is to really to expand out the acronym. And we're not just talking about this one group of people that just get categorised as, oh, just they're the gays and we'll put them over there.
Is a homogenous group.
That's right.
Kind of
you know, they are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, gender diverse, queer asexual,
exactly.
That's right. Yeah. And then you've got the intersectionality with other people with disabilities or people of different ethnic background.
Absolutely.
And each of those sort of spots in that matrix has got a specific group of, you know, issues, concerns, and need a particular suite of supports or...
It sounds like you're talking about intersectionality.
That's
and I'm
right. In order for people... And other people say, oh, it's so complicated. No, it's not complicated.
It's
just giving people the support and the recognition that they need, and to be able to celebrate their own particular identity, to be able to live their best lives.
That's so beautiful. But I think, you know, and speaking of this year, people trying to unravel the bits, or, you know, the bi, intersex and trans communities, it's just like, it's the bits.
Yes.
But, you know, we're seeing, you know, it's 20 by 10, and we are seeing a rise in visibility. So, you know, there's going to be a bi float at Mardi Gras for the first time in a long time. I know.
Oh, good.
I'm going to be on it. I'm very excited.
Oh, great. Oh, in fact, I was just wondering about that and talking about that with my staff today, because, of course, I'm going to Mardi Gras.
Yes.
Yes. So I'll see you there.
Yes, excellent. I'll be dressed like David Bowie. I think we're seeing a rise in visibility, but there's still we're struggling with people just both gay, straight, and gay and straight, of kind of not feeling engaged, like, or not understand that they have to learn a lot more. So people still seeing, you know, recently we had Miley Cyrus talking about being a pansexual person in a marriage that looks like a heterosexual marriage. And people were like, oh, look, it's okay to say you're straight. And this idea that people hear bisexual and often think of it as it being a practice almost. Mm. And so that when... And so even when, you know, Remy won an Oscar for playing Freddie Mercury and he said he was a gay man, people say, well, you know, he was married to a man, or like he was monogamously with a man. And so that makes him gay. And just that kind of still assumption of who we're seeing and the very heteronormative structures that kind of label this is the normal thing and everyone else is other. Mm. And so do you think that as far as kind of getting an awareness of the need for attention, is there being progress in that in LGBTI areas in politics?
Look, I think there has. And, I mean, we've had this focus, you know, since marriage equality, the big focus has been on ending religious discrimination in schools. And so there has been a bit of picking apart, you know, the issues that the bits face in that environment. But even more so, I mean, where I want to move on to, which I had hoped we would manage to sort of get schools out of the way that would be able to end discrimination by the end of last year, but sadly it's not to be the case, is that I've got on the books a notice to get an inquiry up into LGBTIQ discrimination across the board. And as we were discussing, I think that will end up having a focus of let's unpick the acronym. Let's unpick that and sort of see what levels of discrimination in what areas of life, both legal and cultural, you know, where it's legalised and other places where it's not, people still experiencing. Yeah. And so I think that in itself, if we do manage to get that up, it won't be until after the election now, obviously, will give an opportunity to have more of a focus as sort of what is the lived experience of, you know, of bisexual, of intersex, of transgender people, as well as lesbian and gays.
We did get another message in from Sarah. So great to hear you on the show. Senator Janet Rice, you've been paving the way for future Bi+ parliamentarians. I hope to see someone like you in New South Wales. Thanks so much for messaging in, Sarah. If you want to get in touch, you can on 0427 569 949, or email us on air at joy.org.au. We have got another song, and you need to head off, I think, after this. Is that right?
I could stick around for a bit longer. Yes. Having such fun.
Excellent. Well, coming up next, we've got a decent song. This is Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. This is another one of Janet Rice.
Absolutely. Since it was the original, I think in about 1974 or 75, I remember waking up, listening to 3XY, so for people who are around knowing, being that old.
Was that like Rage?
Well, it was, it was the pop radio station, and it was on very high rotation. It seemed like about every second morning you would hear Bohemian Rhapsody. I remember taking my mother a cup of tea in bed, and she would be saying, "There's that song again, that Wooshta, Wooshta song." So, hi, Mum.
It's the Wooshta song on Joy 94.9.
Mama, she's killed a man. Gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun, but now I thought I'd throw it all away. Mama, ooh, didn't mean to make you cry. Shivers down my spine.
silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo, Galileo,
Magnifico.
I'm just a poor boy, nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this monstrosity.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Bismillah, no, we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah, we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah, we will not let you go.
Let me go!
We will not let you go.
Let me go!
We will not let you go.
Never let me go!
No, 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 no.
Oh, mamma mia, mamma mia!
Mamma mia, let me go! Beelzebub has a devil put aside.
The Bylife, and you're listening to The Bypass on Joy.
That's right. This is Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9, where the bisexuals jump on and take over the airwaves. We're here to put the B in LGBTIQA+. I'm Rivi.
I'm Andrew.
And we are joined by Senator Janet Rice.
Yes, that's me.
That's you. That was the live version of Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. Now, we were talking before the break around, among many things, including your own journey to that led to you talking about bisexuality for Bi Plus Awareness Week in September last year and the reactions you had to that, not just from Australia, but from bi and pan people all around the world, and that journey with yourself, with your partner, but also your journey of listening to Bohemian Rhapsody every morning.
That's right. As a 15-year-old. Getting up and going to school as I was cooking my boiled egg, taking my mother a cup of tea.
I think it's one of those songs that it's just hard to imagine why it became as popular as it did, because it's just such a strange, varied pop song. Like, there's nothing really like it.
But it feels so personal at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, and everyone knows it. There's this great video of at a Green Day concert, 10,000 people, and the band is late, and they all just start singing Bohemian Rhapsody from start to finish, and they harmonise.
Yes.
And it's just like one of those songs everyone can just belt out at karaoke and crack on all the high notes.
Oh, my heart.
Now, so we've been talking a bit around what's, you know, your what you do as far as advocacy for LGBTIQA+ issues in government, particularly around the stalling that's been happening on the what's become the next big issue, which has definitely been looking into religious protections for LGBTIQA+ students and teachers at religious schools. And I think what was interesting to me was how a lot of people weren't actually aware that this was a law. I know, like, you know, in Victoria, people weren't aware that was actually allowed. And that kind of lack of awareness, I think we also saw, was a similar one to what happened with a lot of allies during the postal survey, in that people were like, oh, well, why is everyone making a big deal? It's fine. Then, oh, I didn't know people were still like this. I didn't know you were still experiencing these things. Do you think there's some kind of similarities there with what it, having that visibility for people to actually, and being visible and the vulnerability that can cause and the targeting that can cause insofar as people actually being able to recognise that there is a problem? A lot of our harm is invisible too.
Exactly. And certainly sort of the having that visibility does then make you a target. And you know, if you look at the attacks on trans people during the marriage equality debate, it was sort of people almost felt, well, it's a bit hard to attack same-sex attracted people because everybody now knows, you know, somebody who's lesbian or gay. They probably don't know somebody who's bi.
Oh, it was definitely, and we can't attack the gays anymore.
That's right. We can't attack the gays anymore. And so it was sort of the trans being the next group of people that with that level of visibility, these people who are very narrow-minded feeling that, no, we don't, you know, we don't want to know about them. We don't want to acknowledge they exist. And so I think that is the, you know, it's the pushback that comes with that higher visibility, which means it makes it all the more important to be pushing back then against that and sort of having the level of support and for people to feel supported. And certainly during the, we've had now two Senate inquiries into the religious discrimination in schools. And I have just been sobered and amazed and gobsmacked at the level of ongoing discrimination being experienced by LGBT children and students in schools. Officially, there is no discrimination permitted against intersex people, which is an interesting thing. Whether there is or not, I don't know.
I think they classify that as medical.
That's right. That's right. But
and therefore, it could, you can't call that a lifestyle choice.
But for the, and essentially that's what it is. These people, you know, they're very strong religious convictions who feel that, no, you know, it's not acceptable. You just cannot be same-sex attracted. And if you are
choosing this.
You're choosing it and you have to suppress it. And you can't be like that. And if you are, similarly, if you're transgender, no, you have to accept your God-given gender and God-given sex, and that's, there's no question about it. And then pushing that, and then for anybody that dares to go against that, the attacks and the, you know, the discrimination, the stigma,
it's a weaponized shame. It's really a lot of weaponized shame.
Exactly,
I think.
And institutionalized shame, and with all the full force of the institution. And so, you know, what that does to young people is just extraordinary. And to hear that it's still going on in schools around the country today, and that it's still legal. So, you know,
I think for teachers as well is a big thing. Like, I've always found it, you know, I think I remember I went to a private school, but there was like an openly gay, like a few openly gay teachers at the school. But there was like in things like, you know, you couldn't take a same-sex person to a formal, and there was definitely no mention of that when they did sex ed or anything like this. But I think this idea of carrying over your head of who you are is so objectionable that we can't have you working around children. Is that, again, isn't this influence that queer children are only queer because they are exposed to queer people?
Exactly. It's a choice, or it's a socialisation,
it's
that you've
influence.
Been brought up the wrong way. You know, your parents and your teachers haven't treated you correctly. That's why you ended up being the way you are.
Yeah, it's some kind of reaction to something, or they've been indoctrinated, or it's cultural Marxism.
Yes, and so, and you're just hearing then the stories of what that does and the damage that does to young people, and saying, well, we've got to end it. You know, we've got to stop that going on in our schools. And that, you know, to their credit, a lot of religious schools are basically saying, yes, we acknowledge that. And we know now, you know, that people are born, you know, who are same-sex attracted, who are bisexual, who are gender diverse, and we will accept them and love them for who they are, and have managed to reconcile their religious beliefs and people's identity. And so there is, you know, that things are changing, and with the greater awareness and acceptance that, yes, there are LGBT people in the community, and just get used to it, these schools and these religious institutions are recognising, oh, they're actually in our community, so we have to support them.
They're among us.
They're among us, that's right. So it's a change, but at the moment there is still, amongst some of the most, you know, conservative fundamentalist schools, there is still a huge amount of damage and discrimination that's being done. And that's what, you know, the state basically says, we don't accept, you know, that level of discrimination. We don't accept that girls are taught that they're going to just have to stay home and their whole life is just going to be being submissive to their husbands now, even though, you know, a couple of generations ago, that was what the Bible said, that that was the role of women.
Yep.
So we don't accept that anymore. Mm. In the same way, we should not accept that, you know, in the name of religion, that there is going to be such damage and such discrimination done to same-sex attracted and gender diverse people.
It also, I suppose, has always been a matter of frustration to me about the areas where religious discrimination is allowed and the areas where it's not. So, you know, they often say, you know, it's very rare to allow religious discrimination on the basis of ethnicity, for example. But for gender and sexuality, it's okay.
Yes.
And given that in Australia, the majority of our religious institutions are run by a particular kind of person who has a particular kind of gender that they still identify after being assigned at birth, yeah, I just think it's interesting how religion, at least how religious discrimination is argued, it's always about the right to discriminate on gender and the right to discriminate based on sexuality. But on the note of it being like, you know, this choice, do you think that might be one of the elements as to why people don't like to talk about bisexuality? Because it actually implies that there is an element of choice and people actually are choosing this, not because there's anything wrong with them, but because it is a part of themselves. I've always thought that it kind of has been the sense that even if it isn't, if it is a choice, what's wrong with that? So what's wrong with actually choosing?
That's right. There's nothing wrong about sort of having that relationship with someone who's the same sex as you.
Yeah.
It's okay.
And I could have a relationship with a man. I'm just choosing not to because I'm okay with both, as opposed to that mindset and narrative of all those poor things, they can't help it. That kind of bisexuality kind of underwrites a lot of that argument.
It kind of, changes the narrative and says you do have choice. And just because we've chosen to embrace these elements of ourselves, does that necessarily mean that we are lesser, that we don't exist?
Well, I suppose that our existence then questions all of these very important and powerful structures that keep particular people very, very, very well off. That's just, again, my hot opinion for the night. I know, dear listener, you're very surprised at me being political and raging on the radio. That's
happened.
No. If you have any ideas or opinions around this sort of thing, or things that you would like to see change in the way that we do talk about LGBTQIA+ issues in regards to bisexual people, this is your time. Message in on 0427 569 949, or email us at onair@joy.org.au. Coming up is the final song from Janet Rice, Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell. Beautiful.
Yeah. So, can I tell you the story of this one as well?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes, well, this is my connection with community radio. When in my first job that I had after I left uni, which was working for what was then the Conservation Council of Victoria, now Environment Victoria, I used to do their Tuesday morning radio program, Habitat and Heritage, on 3CR. In fact, it was once a fortnight. We shared it with Friends of the Earth. They did the other Tuesday, 10:30 Tuesday morning, and Big Yellow Taxi was our theme song. So whenever I hear it, it takes me back to those falling down 3CR studios in the 25, 30 years ago.
Oh, community radio. It's great. You should join and become a member. Anyway, this is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Triple Bypass.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique and a swinging hot spot. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum, and they charged the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Please don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that
that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. A parking lot.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. That was Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell, and you're listening to Triple Bypass. We're here to put the B and the P and the polysexuals, pansexuals, omnisexuals, queers, multigender attracted folk, and everyone who loves us. You're all welcome.
All you lovely, lovely people.
We don't gatekeep. Everyone's very, very welcome to listen in. My name's Ruby.
I'm Andrew.
And we're very excited to be joined by Senator Janet Rice. We've been having such a lovely chat with
Indeed.
You.
Indeed, yes.
And that was that was one of your choices, because that is a throwback to when you were doing community radio.
That's right, yes. Behind the panel, just like you are now. I might get back to it one day, post-senatorial career, back to radio.
I look forward to hearing you on the airwaves.
It's good fun. Now, I think, like, you know, as we kind of start to finish off the show, you're going to be heading down to Mardi Gras march. You'll be marching with the Greens in then. And what number are they on? If people wanted to look for you on the marching order, do you know?
Oh, I've got no idea. The last few years it's been certainly not near the front. There's been quite a long wait before we've headed off, and it's probably the same this year. But you'll have to keep a lookout for us, all with our rainbow triangle T-shirts.
So. Oh, gorgeous. Yeah. I memorised this. The bi-visibility float is 167, which when I saw, I was just like, oh, my actual gosh. Like, yeah, lots of waiting.
Yeah, that's right. Such a good fun, actually. I mean, the difference between Mardi Gras is more formalised than Pride, and sort of having to be there inside the compound and waiting. You get to sort of see all the other floats and go and wander around and see that incredible diversity of our communities.
How long have you been marching at Mardi Gras for?
Only since I've been in the Senate. So, I think this is my fourth Mardi Gras. Yeah.
And when you were marching for the first time, so one of the things that a lot of bi and pan people talk about is that kind of anxiety that comes with stepping into these very openly rainbow spaces, and that sense of like, am I here for the right, you know, should I be here? Am I taking up this space? Or will people not understand that I do deserve to be here? Will I have to deal with that?
Or do I fit the norm? And particularly at Mardi Gras, you know, it's just got so many people who are so flamboyant and think, yes, I'm queer, but, you know, that's not me.
Yeah.
And recognising that, yes, you know, we're all different and all, some of us are really out there, but others are, you know, just wanting to be quietly proud.
The quiet queers.
That's right. The quietly proud queers.
Folk. Queer as folk.
That's right.
Well, exactly. I think there's definitely like, and I think that's what also comes from as we see this movement start to move forward, you know, the right to be seen as individuals as opposed to a homogenous group. And I think I've been quite surprised recently in my little, you know, bubble of realising that a lot of people who haven't had much exposure to the LGBTIQA plus community don't actually understand that there are different perspectives inside of it. Like, what you mean, you're not all the same. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And sort of, and people, and as part of, you know, people coming, accepting themselves and their identities as well, and saying, oh no, I can't be queer, you know, I can't be gay because gay looks like that.
Yeah.
And recognising that, no, gay just looks like your next door neighbour.
Yeah.
And for that next door neighbour to be, you know, quietly proud and out as in providing role models of all different types of people and all of our varying sexualities and gender identities.
And I think that's why, again, going back to you and that speech, because I think, again, like, it's been the biggest thing that's happened for the bi plus community in Australia for a very long time. And I suppose it was, again, that kind of sight of, given that a lot of the time that the way bisexuality is portrayed in media is often, when it's a woman, it's usually someone who's hyper-miscuous, who's often using sex to manipulate people, or is in a pornography film, or is a serial killer.
Yes.
And you are, in your own words, a self-described dag.
Yeah.
And getting up there with, like, you know, your rainbow thing and talking about your community. And so that kind of sense of, this is what a bisexual looks like. I think that just, you know, just gives such a huge... I mean, I can't say that because I do radio, so no one knows what I look like.
No. You are the ultimate bisexual in that you're invisible.
I'm completely invisible, but I'm also obnoxious at the same time, which is the other thing people say, like, you know, obnoxiously bisexual. Thank you. But have you found that even like in your staff and message you got, people did feel more comfortable being able to disclose that they were bisexual after seeing you?
Yes, and I think for a lot of people that actually, that identification as well, and sort of saying, hey, that's me, you know, it's not, oh, I don't know whether I am gay or lesbian or not, and oh, maybe I am, maybe I aren't, oh, maybe I'm actually bisexual, you know, maybe it's not a choice between being heterosexual and same-sex attracted.
Yeah. There's a word out there for that.
There's actually many words.
That's right.
What's the difference between a horse and a unicorn? No, a unicorn and a bisexual?
You'll see representations of unicorns in media?
Close. You'll see a unicorn on TV, not a horse that doesn't like labels. Because I think there is like the reluctance to say the word, and I think that was what really stood out to me, was that you were not just saying like, you know, I love people, and the way that often the media can kind of work around saying a word that does come with a lot of stigma based on like a lot of both from the gay and lesbian and straight communities of just like what bisexual is, to have that, and also talking about like, you know, bi plus, the idea of bi plus being the umbrella term for multigender attraction. You caught up with the lingo.
Oh, that's right.
Were you doing some research to find out?
I've got myself and my team, I can tell you.
And I thought, and,
yeah, no, with lots of good information advocacy from organisations, you know, bi organisations. That's right. It was a team effort.
It always is. We were a good team players. Yeah.
By definition.
By definition. And I think I thought that your story as well, you know, that, you know, spending so much time advocating as an ally for your partner, your trans partner, and as a champion of transgender rights, that kind of that did come first, and then moving to gender and stuff for yourself and for sexuality as well. Do you think that one of the things that really is what really shakes a lot of these people we've been talking about before, the rusted on opponents to any movement really around breaking through heteronormativity, breaking through gender binary, that both trans suggests that gender is fluid and that gender can move, and so does bisexuality. So I suppose in ways that after some time and a lot of forcing it down, the same kind of mindset can accept a gay, because it can accept in the thing of, well, they can't choose it, but, you know, there are gay men who are still good blokes who still, like, you know, drink beer
and you know where they stand.
And they're men.
That's
they're
right. That's certainty. Whereas I think one of the challenges is from people thinking, oh, you know, I don't know, you know. Mm. Don't you prefer either, you know?
And it was like, what if I do? I know I like more than one. I might have a preference. And I think, do you find that that question comes up a lot, this idea of having a preference, and that, you know, when are you going to make up your mind? Mm. And again, that double whammy of you can choose, but also it's not a choice, but also you've got to prefer one over the other, but also you have to have exactly 50-50 attraction.
Yes.
And that if you don't, if it's whatever, 70-30, but it changes, it's all its murky little cloud.
It's very fluid.
What's going on today?
Flexible, I think. Flexible.
Oh, I like
that was Sia's term, I think, going back to our
Sia. Oh, yeah. Well, she
described herself as flexible.
I like that. Well, I think even then, like, you know, the bi plus umbrella, people who describe themselves as heteroflexible or homoflexible, because, like, they see themselves as having a pretty strong preference. But do you find that in some ways, since you've kind of... So this will be your first Mardi Gras since you've come out, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so do you think that... Are you going into it with, like, any different thoughts? Are you going to be wearing a bi flag?
I might have to, yes. Oh, along with my rainbow green T-shirt. That would be a good idea.
Yes. Rainbows go very well with a bi flag,
right,
in my opinion.
Rather well.
Yes.
And so, and I think, did you notice when you were marching at Pride, there were quite a lot of bi and pan flags spreading around.
There are a lot, which is great to see. So.
It is. I think the youngins are all about the fluidity in everything, and you need to be, keep up. Yes. I mean, generally I find that meme with Seymour, no, like, it could it be I'm out of touch? No, it's the children that are wrong. And so I suppose, you know, we are heading to a federal election in the next few months sometime, whenever, but one of the other things that you've been a great advocate for LGBTIQA plus rights, I suppose in the future, one of the things that has come up a few times is this looking at biphobia is an individual kind of attack. Do you think that you know, that's a conversation that we're ready to have in the Senate and in parties in general?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, it's like we were discussing before, that with the increasing visibility is the pushback, and so there's that recognition of the biphobia that exists and the discrimination and the prejudice. So, yeah, I think we will be having more of that discussion, and it's, you know, hopefully it will be positive rather than sort of being too traumatic for people.
I think one of the big things that we're hoping to fix with to look at with a bi and pan community is defining ourselves by what we celebrate, not just by what we're not just by suffering.
Exactly.
And speaking of, well, we all know that, at least as far as I'm concerned, Australians do celebrate you very much. And so it's been such a huge pleasure to have you here on the show with us, Janet. Thank you so much.
It's been an absolute delight, Ruby. Andrew.
And we'll be back again next week at the same time. That'll be after Mardi Gras. So if Anthony and I sound a bit tired, that is why. You can watch us on the SBS cast. We'll be dressed as Bowie and Freddie Mercury. Yeah. I'm so excited. Anyway, coming up next is Summer Sessions with Local Roots, bringing you some excellent Aussie local music. So stay tuned for that. Don't touch that dial. Find our podcast on iTunes and join us next week. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.